To tonight's program, just a shout out to Occupy Oakland that has effectively closed that city. Thousands of people shut down downtown Oakland. We will be joining a live feed here a little bit later on in this program from Oakland. A general strike that so far has involved thousands of people in the city of Oakland and has been to this point nonviolent and very, very effective. We're going to start the program tonight. We're joined by Karen Higgins, who's the president of the National Nurses United. As you know, we have had several chats with people from National Nurses United for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the fact that this nursing organization is in sympathy with and is participating in the Occupy movement as they are trained to do, as nurses, as medical personnel. Karen is a staff nurse at Boston Medical, past president of the Massachusetts Nurses Association. I could go on and on about Karen Higgins, but I think what we ought to do is just talk to her. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I understand that National Nurses United, or rather I should say a corresponding group in France, is planning a demonstration when the G20 meets tomorrow to continue to attempt to carve up what's left of the global economy. Is that correct?
That's right. Actually, we do have nurses that have gone over to join a multitude of nurses and others from across the continents over there to actually have a rally there over the same issue that we're having here.
Now, for people who don't know, the G20, the so-called Group of 20, is the comprised of the finance ministers and central bank governors that get together periodically to discuss key issues in the global economy. Why the nurses' presence at this G20 meeting in Cannes, France, tomorrow?
Well, I think it's for the same reason that we've been so involved over here in the United States, is because we totally, and I think the nurses over there will tell you the same thing, we're totally watching the effect of the economy has on, the people that we take care of every day, whether we're in the hospital, the community. Obviously, everybody sees it also within their family. And we're actually seeing bad things happening. People are getting sicker. They're not getting care that they need. And because they don't either have insurance, don't have money, can't afford the co-pays, whatever their reasons. And in reality, in some cases, life-saving tests are not being done because they feel they can't afford it, and then we see them later when bad things happen. Mm-hmm. And I think the same issues are arising over there, and it is a global issue. And over there at this meeting, the plan is to, we believe that, some of the countries, I believe like Germany and I believe France, they are seriously looking at doing a financial tax. And we have been pushing that on this, on the United States as one of the things that we could actually do that is not something that's going to hurt people by cutting Social Security and other, safety net programs right now that are in effect, and look at things where we know there is money, there's a lot of money, and it's time to start looking at the taxing them to be able to put their input into helping this country get back on its feet. And I think the same is going on over there. So we're over there to make sure that they clearly hear that you may be in France, but we're over there with you to say, this needs to happen. It has to happen now. We need to stop the spiraling downward of what's going on, not only in this country, but across the world lately.
It's my understanding that the tax you're talking about is the financial transaction tax. It is merely a tax on these ridiculous transactions in the financial services industry that really, an industry that doesn't produce anything and now is not funding anything to be produced, but has become this giant casino. That's what you're talking about, the financial transaction tax.
Right. And, you know, there was a tax on, a financial tax up until the mid-60s, and then it basically kind of disappeared. And we feel that at this point, with what's going on in the economy, we need to look at really places where we know there is a lot of money changing hands and they're not being taxed on it. And we're looking at something around 0.5%, which we know, if everybody's looked at it, could bring as much as $350 billion yearly back into the economy. Mm-hmm. They could fund some of these programs to help get people back in their homes, back on their feet, help with health care and other issues that we're all struggling with and we're seeing bad outcomes from. And so a 0.5% is not a huge amount as far as percentage-wise, but it is a huge amount that could be put back into this economy to help people that are struggling.
Karen, I think it's apparent in this country and also in certain other areas of the globe that the people, the so-called middle class or the working class or the working poor or the former middle class, however we want to identify the vast majority of people in these countries that are experiencing the Occupy movement, that a point has been reached now where folks have had enough. And I think it is obvious that something has to give here. There's one of a couple of responses from the various states that we've talked about on this program. There can be suppression of this movement or an attempt to suppress it, which could get horrific, frankly. We can see the results of that in Libya, in Syria, in Egypt. There can be an attempt to negotiate by the state leaders, whether they are presidents, prime ministers, what have you. There can be a complete revamping of the economic system in the countries that are affected by this, including the United States. Do you see any of those three options? Perhaps you see a fourth or fifth that is more viable than the others?
Well, I think, you know, we have to, I mean, I think everybody's trying to figure out how to make things work. I mean, as you say, and as you hear everybody in all the different states saying, you know, it's not even, middle class, it's 99% of this, you know, country.
Right.
Is struggling, and we have 1% that seems to have no problems and continues to roll with a lot of money, and we're not reinvesting in this country. We're reinvesting in other places, which I'm not sure, because everybody else seems to be into the same, the same, struggle. But something has to change, and I think that people at this point, the 99%, are going to insist that something changes. I think it's going to have to be, as we say with President Obama, and Congress is, how this is going to happen. And I think they need to start taking people seriously, and this is one of the reasons, as everybody's protesting, is to say we do need change, but we need constructive change. And we feel that, you know, looking at this as far as taxing Wall Street is a beginning. It's the first move to say it's time for those that have been kind of having a free ride to start paying their fair share back into this country and helping people get back on their feet. It's not the be-all and end-all. It's just the first step. But we need to have constructive ways of doing that. And, again, going after the social programs that we have in place that are trying to desperately help people survive, that is not the direction we need to go in. We need to look at where is the money in this country and how do we get some of that money back into this country to help people that are struggling. I think, like you say, we're seeing it happen in many different ways. It would be nice that, we could be leaders in this in making changes that actually start that process of reinvesting in this country.
We're coming up on a break. Karen, can you stay with me for one more segment after this break?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold, and we'll come back after these commercials and the internet break. One thing I want to ask you when we come back, President Obama has up to this point, other than maybe a passing reference to the Occupy movement, and certainly not by name, has ignored pretty much what is going on in the streets here. And what I want to ask you when we come back is, how effective do you think an approach to him at the G20 will be? We'll be back in a moment. We're talking with Karen Higgins, President of the National Nurses United. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Talking with Karen Higgins, who is chatting with us from Massachusetts. She's president of National Nurses United and a staff nurse at Boston Medical Center, past president of the Massachusetts Nurses Association, involved in an action that will occur tomorrow in Cannes, France, as the G20 members get together to further carve up what's left of the global economy. That question, Karen, what... since Obama, President Obama, has not acknowledged this movement so far directly, he has delivered a couple of glancing comments, I guess, but what do you think will be the result of the action plan by nurses that are coming from the United States and reside in Europe who will protest outside this G20 meeting? Do you expect, anticipate any kind of reaction from Obama from this action?
Well, I'm hoping there is a reaction. I'm hoping he understands that, that the issue is going to follow him wherever he goes, that he needs to start addressing people's concerns. And as this action takes place, obviously, over there, at the same time tomorrow, we will be having, again, a big action in Washington, D.C., at the same, pretty much around the same time. To make sure that, it's not just a group over there, it's over here as well. The question becomes is, which I think we've been asking is, what is going on in Washington and who are you actually representing? When you have all these occupied Wall Street events continuing to grow across the country, and in some places getting even bigger, when you have, this is, I think, our second trip to Washington over this issue. We even went to different congressional offices and had rallies outside offices. It's like, I don't know how long you can ignore us. And then the bigger question is, who actually are you really taking care of in Washington?
Mm-hmm.
And as this continues to grow, it doesn't look like your focus is the people of this country. It looks like it's that 1%, and it's the Wall Street group. And I think it's a question that has to be asked, and I think it's time that we get an answer. And the answer to the question is either you're with Wall Street and you will do nothing constructive to help people without, and not look at cutting the services that are helping people survive, or you're with, the people of this country and you'll start to make changes and look at a tax on Wall Street as one of the changes that has to happen, and not a tax that's so minute that it really, it's like, okay, we did it, but we really didn't accomplish anything with it. We do need to be around that 0.5% so that we know that there will be substantial money that will continue to roll in to help programs and help people get back on their feet. And I think it's time to call not only President Obama, but all of those in Washington that were elected to take care of the people of this country, to call them out and say it's time to stop this, you know, political, you know, discussion that's going on. And, you know, Democrats, Republicans, as nurses, we're concerned about the people of this country. It doesn't matter what your political beliefs are. We need to stop and just seriously start to help to get people back on their feet, because people are dying,
mm-hmm.
Because they're not able to get care, nutrition, you know, the things that they really truthfully need, jobs and homes. And so I think it's just not President Obama. I think it's everyone in Washington.
Well, that's true.
That needs to look at this seriously.
Yeah.
And he, obviously, as the leader, needs to take, you know, the leadership in moving mm-hmm. something forward.
And the fact that, as you point out, and other guests we've had from National Nurses United have pointed out, yes, people are dying. And given action, a legislative action that seems that is going to happen in Washington, the so-called social safety net in this country that is weak as it is going to be cut even further. So based on that, there will be more death, there will be more illness, there will be more untreated sickness, and consequently, more people cut loose. But the question to me for the past 2 years, Karen, has been, I don't expect the Republican Party ever to put its efforts into anything that benefits the people in general. But I did at one time have an expectation about that of where it concerned Democrats. And I don't see it coming from the Democratic Party leadership, whether it's in the legislative branch, and certainly not from this president, whom I voted for. So I'm left with the conclusion that, as you just mentioned, and I think a lot of people are realizing, neither the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party, neither one is going to address this issue. Consequently, there is going to have to be a different movement, which, of course, the Occupy movement, or the efforts put into this now by nurses, by school teachers, by veterans, there is going to have to be some other political activity, since the Democrats and the Republicans have totally ignored this and continue to do so. I want you to address that, Karen. If you can you stay one more segment?
Sure.
Okay, let me put you on hold while we do a break here, and we'll come back. The question is simply, where do we turn? Because never the Republicans, and all of a sudden not the Democrats either, addressing these very, very critical issues. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, we're talking with Karen Higgins, the co-president of National Nurses United. That last question, Karen, if you want to address that, where do we turn, since neither political party in this country seems at least bit interested in really addressing the issues that are bringing people into the streets by bigger and bigger numbers? Where do we turn?
You know, I think that's an interesting question, and I think it's a hard one to answer. I think people are looking for, looking for that leadership. And, you know, the question is, where is it going to be found? And I think as this movement continues to grow, and people get more involved, questionably whether something will grow out of that people will feel that is the direction they want to go in. It's either that, or maybe this movement will make those in Washington rethink, what they're doing, and take, you know, the concerns that people have very much more seriously. And the hope is that would happen and things would change up there, but I don't know if that I'm not quite sure, but you know, obviously something. You know, you look at what's going around the world and in different countries, and you know, you say this is you don't want to. You know, you want change, and there's people are demanding a change, and I think it's growing. And the hope is that those that are in the leadership position are going to listen to what people are saying.
You know, if you take a look. I think Keith Olbermann from MSNBC, at the time he was with MSNBC, may have started this, but the publicizing and the actual event, several health fairs that were organized around the country through donations to his program, and where hundreds, in some cases thousands of people turn out for the most basic kind of health care. And, you know, I noticed that during those events, there were no comments from anybody in the political world. There were no, with a couple of noted exceptions, you know, Bernie Sanders, a few people. Yes, of course. But I mean, overall, the silence was deafening. Here we have thousands of people lining up to go in to have the blood pressure checks, to have, in some cases, it was dental work. It was, have blood sugar levels, tested, to get medicine for diabetes. Dear God, what does it take until finally the politicians understand that there has to be a change in the way healthcare services are delivered in this country? Or I'll tell you, you know, I dance around this a lot, Karen, but a society can only take so much of this until eventually it explodes. And once it explodes, it's very difficult to put that genie back in the bottle.
Well, that's it. And you have to question. You're right. Is this the direction we're going in? And again, you would like to think that those that are in positions to be able to make change are watching this and realizing that it can't be business as usual. Things have to change, and you need to change your priorities. And hopefully that will happen, and we can get things, you know, instead of being in a destructive mode, we can get things into being, you know, restructured and rebuilding and, you know, becoming what we, you know, the country that we were, that we took care of the people in this country, our elderly, our children. You know, you see all these, you know, a lot, which was absolutely amazing when you go to these Occupy Wall Street to see the students that are, you know, wanting to be in college, wanting to continue their education, and are questioning how do you accomplish that. When the cost is phenomenal, and you pay, if you're just lucky, you get a job when you get out.
Right.
You're spending, you know, most of your life just paying back your college education.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, you know, 4 years of college is nothing anymore. You need to keep going on to grad school to do other things as well. And it's, again, it's ridiculous. It's going to be that what very few people can afford to go to school, and the rest of the country can't afford that. That is, you know, again, I mean, this is mind-boggling that our leaders are not looking at this and saying we have to change the direction. We need to reinvest in the children, our, you know, our education, our health care, all the things that made this country what it was. We need to go back to those and rebuild them, and not just be concerned about who has the most money at the end of the day. It's amazing to me that this is happening in this country.
Mm-hmm. And to me. Karen Higgins, thank you so much for taking time tonight. We will, I will be paying close attention to what occurs in Cannes, France, tomorrow at the G20 meeting. And if things don't, if things in this country don't turn around, I hate to say this, but I'm sure I'll see you at the barricades.
Well, and hopefully, like I said, we'll be in Washington tomorrow. And as one thing as nurses is we are not, we don't give up easily. And when we are taking care of patients, which we feel strongly right now the country is the patient, there's no stopping. You keep the battle going, and we will continue to do everything we can to fight, to make sure that, you know, we take care of people and we make it a priority in this country. So I'm sure you will see us around in many, many different places, and we'll be in Washington tomorrow, and ask people that are, if you're in the area, if you know people down there, ask them to come and join us. You know, the more, I think, the more powerful we are in getting our message across that we need to stop making change and asking for a tax on Wall Street is our first step. And if we can do that, then we continue to build on that.
Well, thank you very much, Karen. I appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you. Have a good night, Mike.
Okay, Karen, you too. Thanks. Thank you so much. Karen Higgins, who's co-president of National Nurses United. Yeah, where do you turn when your political leadership class, totally owned and operated by the economic system that's destroying the country, does not, because it cannot, respond? Again, going back to the events today and tonight here on the East Coast in Oakland, California. The only thing I can add to that is, or comment about that is, thank God for the people in Oakland who are leading this this general strike that so many people have talked about, that it would be the most effective way to tell the political economic machine that it's no longer going to continue operating. And a little bit later this evening, hopefully, we will pick up some of the live stream from KRON. I believe it's in KRON. That's Channel 4 in San Francisco. Is that correct? They have a live stream up at Ustream. As a matter of fact, Kathy, do you have access to that now?
Or videos, please visit the Cron 4 Facebook fan page. You can post them there or email them to breakingnews@cron4.com. We'll be back after this quick break.
All right. Well, just in time for their quick break. We'll try to carry at least some of the audio portion. Obviously, we can't carry the video portion of what's occurring in Oakland. It's my understanding that they have closed down the Port of Oakland, which is the fourth or fifth busiest port in the United States, or is it on the West Coast? I'm not sure. But I saw someone being interviewed, and they were asked, what's the point in closing down the port? What's the point in closing down anything? Is to, in my opinion, is to let the power structure know that it's not going to continue to be business as usual. This is the whole idea of a general strike. You know, a strike itself is to close down a business because the working conditions are intolerable, or the pay is unacceptable, or the attitudes of the bosses can no longer be tolerated. So a strike is called against a specific business or enterprise. This is not a strike. This is a general strike, where people just stop participating in a system that continues to ignore us. I mean, this is not hard stuff, but apparently it's going to take more of this action to make the point to the economic and political establishment in this country that the time is now. The change is now. It's going to come now. And I hope these clowns at the top of the food chain understand this before there is a confrontation that does result in more than what happened to Scott Olson, as terrible as that was. But it could be worse. And I think, as you probably know by now, a lot of military veterans marched through Lower Manhattan today in solidarity with Scott Olson. And the warning is coming across fairly clearly and fairly rationally so far to the people who continue to ignore what's going on in the streets. The warning is very clear. If the system doesn't change, it's going to be destroyed. It can't be any clearer than that.
You're just stupid. superpowers and let them die.
Before the hour, let's see if we can pick up the audio portion of KRON Channel 4 News in San Francisco. The anchor person is interviewing or talking with Sergeant Dom Arad Serena of the Oakland Police Officers Association.
That can fix some of the issues and problems so that we can get a consistent message on what we're going to do. I think we owe it to the citizens of Oakland to let them know exactly what the plan is for this protest here and now.
All right. Dom Arad Serena, thank you for your time this afternoon. Oakland Police Officers Association, of course, expressing dismay yesterday with a lack of direction from City Hall on how to handle the entire Occupy movement, much less today's general strike. Nonetheless, feeling better that there has been at least some positive response from the citizens of Oakland who share police concerns. We're going to step over now and talk with Catherine Heenan. She's joining us with a look at news around the nation today, Catherine.
Well, the all right. In the first part of that interview, the sergeant mentioned the fact that there have been no arrests so far in Oakland, nothing. And in fact, that the sporadic violence that occurred at a Whole Foods store and a couple other places was stopped by the protesters. You know, once again, as we talked about the other night, this movement now is attracting its share of provocateurs, I'm sure sent by scum like Andrew Breitbart and the rest of these freaks to try to disrupt what is essentially a peaceful, at this point, movement. So the scum that were sent to disrupt by Beck or Breitbart or Limbaugh or the rest of these right-wing pigs were stopped in their acts of vandalism by the Occupy protesters in Oakland themselves, which to some people is surprising. But if you've been following this movement, that's not surprising at all. This is not about violence. It is not about, at this point, I have to add, it's not about vandalism. It is about notifying and in the most direct way the so-called power structure, the political economic power structure in this country, that this game is over, that they have taken us to the brink of utter destruction, not just our economic and political system, but also our global environment. They have pushed this to the point and they refuse to listen. So what do you do when someone refuses to listen? Well, if it's a mule, you pick up a 2x4 and you swap it upside the head. If it is what you consider to be maybe, possibly, human beings who can still click into their rational side, then you bring hundreds of thousands of people into the street. Now, sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes you have to go to the next step, which means bringing millions of people to the street. And then that doesn't work. And then you go to tens of millions of people into the street. And when that doesn't work, then you adopt tactics that change the government, that change the political system. And again, one always hopes that these sorts of changes are done peacefully and orderly. As we look around at the so-called Arab Spring or what has occurred in North Africa and certain areas of the Middle East, it has been anything but a peaceful transition. But there is a movement on this planet now that the 1% is not going to ignore any longer. This game of hide and seek and, gee, I'll just look the other way. And, oh, aren't the little dirty hippies acting rather funny? We thought we got rid of these thugs 38, 40 years ago. And here they are again. Yeah, here they are again. Only this time it's for real. This time it's not about the Vietnam War. It's not about the CIA spying on student organizations. It's not about equal rights for African Americans in this country. It is not a single issue protest. This is a global protest in two definitions or two meanings of that word. And the power structure had better pay attention. Don't you agree? if you have a chance at some point this evening, I want you to go to bradblog.com. Brad Friedman, who is a regular substitute host for this program, he has up at his website video evidence suggesting that the Oakland Police Department violated California state law and a federal consent decree in its violent confrontation with Occupy Oakland demonstrators the other night. And at Bradblog, there are several videos. There's a guest commentator there, or guest blogger, Ernest Canning. But if you have a chance tonight, go to bradblog.com. He's got it up on the front page of his website. The results of this investigation by Brad into what occurred the other night when Scott Olson, Iraq veteran, after two deployments in Iraq, he comes back to the United States and is shot by a police officer. And it is appearing more and more that this attack on Scott Olson was deliberate, planned, and premeditated, that he was selected, not knowing that he was a veteran, of course, even though I think he had, didn't he have on his military blouse, but he was shot. And I think the evidence that Brad will present, I haven't looked at this completely. I've got to go back and take a look also. But I think the evidence that he's talking about is that the violence perpetrated by the Oakland police, the general violence is addressed, but also the specific shooting in the head with a tear gas canister or something of Scott Olson, was a deliberate act. And again, today in New York, military personnel, people who are no longer active duty, although I wouldn't be surprised if some of them were active duty, made a very clear show of force in Lower Manhattan in support of Scott Olson. So the city administrations or whoever's in control of these police forces had better understand that This is not going to be allowed to continue. I mean, attacks on school teachers, firefighters, military veterans, union leaders, it is not going to be tolerated. And I would suggest that city authorities take note of that and act accordingly. We'll be back after the break. Hi, Truth Seekers. This hour is sponsored by Mary from Suquamish, Washington, who says, "We love the roar of Mike Malloy." Mary from Suquamish, Washington. Thanks, Mary. I appreciate that very much. We love the roar of Mike Malloy. I think it's time for Prairie 2. His subject line tonight is a little weird. Subject line says, "The birds don't flee the stalking horse. The man with gun walks beside and remains unseen until it's too late. Do, 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 do. All right, Bruce. I don't know what that means, but this is what he wrote. The stock markets recovered some of Monday and Tuesday's losses today as President Obama made his way to France for a G20 meeting. All the talk of the meeting will be about Greece, the International Monetary Fund that serves as the stalking horse for predatory capitalism, is not happy with Greece and is withholding $7 billion in aid over the Greek decision to revert to democracy. The Greek prime minister is actually going to consult the peasants on whether they will accept the yoke of servitude to the international bankers or not. The Greeks deny that the vote will be about staying in the EU or on the euro as a unit of a monetary unit, but only over the bailout terms, which calls for practically all of Greece to simply be handed over to corporations for pennies on the euro to raise money to pay creditors. If they do reject servitude, these Greeks, they will have no choice but to drop out of the euro. And in fact, that's the only rational course of action. Once on their own currency, they can negotiate for terms. This won't set well with the disaster capitalists who stood to make a metaphorical killing, so we may see real killing instead. Back in the States, the Federal Reserve has revised downward its estimate of the strength of our economy over the next 2 years, and the Federal Reserve is predicting unemployment to stay the same. They did say that the Fed won't be printing any new money, at least for a while, given the vast sums they've turned out in the past few years. If it were actually paper money instead of digital accounting entries, it would fuel the job recovery by itself. Unfortunately, all it does is keep the zombie banks going and does nothing for the economy except for keeping deflation at bay. Still, that's a good thing. At least until the 99% movement can get enough people engaged so that real reform can become possible without an unreasoning fear and panic gripping the country. As FDR said in his first inaugural speech, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance, end quote. At the same time, Adolf Hitler, who was backed by money from Prescott Bush, was consolidating power in Germany. The Greeks are going to vote on accepting servitude or not. Here, in the U.S., the corporations count the ballots. It will take more than voting. You will become a serf only by choice. Doing nothing is a choice. Choose to fight back instead. Prairie2.com. Yeah, the other day when I saw that the Greek prime minister, a socialist, who decided to put it as a referendum to the Greek people, this decision that was made by these vampire international predator bankers, and everybody, all the ruling class in Europe just about had a complete nerve out. They almost all lost their bowels at the same time. What? It's going to go to the people of Greece? As Prairie 2 so eloquently points out, whether or not they want the yoke of servitude placed around their shoulders. Well, I think you and I know, given what has occurred in Greece over the past several months, the rioting, the refusal, the absolute refusal to go along with this vampiric scheme against them. The Greeks are saying, no, you've sunk your goddamn fangs in deep enough. Capitalists, no! So we know what the result of the vote is going to be. And I think it is safe to predict that once the Greeks allow their country to go bankrupt and all the bankers flee and pee their pants and scream unfair, then there will be a domino effect. And what we're looking at in the European Union is first, I think, a breakup of that union. It was a bad idea to begin with, and I think most people will acknowledge that, at least in hindsight. The reason these economies can't pull themselves out is because they are tied to the euro. And of course, once the European economic system crumbles into dust, how long will it be before the American economic system also crumbles, since the American banking establishment, the disaster capitalists, are the ones who engineered this collapse that's coming and who are way exposed because of that engineering. So logic dictates that after the collapse of the European economic system will then come the collapse of the American. Now, I'm sure that Prairie 2 will correct me on this if I'm wrong. But once that occurs, then what? Then does the Chinese colossus stand astride the earth and say, okay, here's how the game is going to be played now? Interesting question. Yeah, the Federal Reserve said today that they don't expect any economic growth over the next a couple of years. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, a little bit. 2.5% in 2012 and 3% in 2013. 2.5%. The Fed also predicted that the rate of unemployment would remain above 8.5% at the end of 2012. All these numbers are lies, of course. I don't think you buy this any more than I do. The unemployment rate in this country right now is supposed to be, what, 9.1%? That is a lie. The unemployment rate in this country is around 16%. It is certainly in the high double, or the high teens, if not into the 20s. And in some demographic groups, the number is 30%, 35%. So this irritating 9.1% that they keep talking about is an absolute lie. You know it. I know it. And they know we know it, but for some reason they continue to bandy that number about. But Bernanke made it pretty clear today, the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Sorry, everybody. Nothing's going to get any better. In fact, you know, when you have a capitalist economy like this one that is dying, that is crumbling, if things are not getting decidedly better, then by definition, they are getting worse. And I'm just wondering how much more the economic system can handle. Prairie 2 has been telling the listeners of this program for, what, 2 or 3 years now to buy canned goods. And it's time perhaps to rotate your canned goods if they're getting near the expiration date and haven't hit the expiration date. Get them to the nearest food bank where they'll be used immediately and restock your shelves. Take some comments. The number is 877-996-2556. The following letter was sent today by Bank of America to all its debit card customers. You understand what happened with Bank of America and their plan to continue to gouge the American public. This is the letter. Dear valued customers, as most of you probably know by now, last month we instituted a $5 monthly fee for all of our debit card users. To say that what followed this decision was a poop storm would be a massive understatement, considering that just 3 years earlier, taxpayers had bailed us out with billions of their hard-earned dollars. It's understandable the Bank of America was compared to a person who, as he is pulled from a burning building, turns and kicks the fireman in the scrotum. That's why we are writing to you today with a simple message. Our bad! And to tell you that we are refunding the $5 to you effective immediately. All you have to do is pay a simple one-time $10 refund fee. You can receive your refund online or pick it up at your nearest Bank of America branch, where a teller will hand the money directly to you for a simple one-time $15 handling fee. If you do visit our branch, feel free to use any of our services, including our state-of-the-art ballpoint pens and deposit slips. Prices for these are on request, of course. Again, accept our apologies for instituting the debit card fee. We have learned our lesson, and we make this solemn promise. Next time we squeeze money out from you, we'll do it in a way you won't even notice. Sincerely, Bank of America. Now, this is reported by Andy Borowitz on theborowitzreport.com. Oh, my. Bill is in Oakland with Occupy Oakland. Bill, welcome to the program.
Mike, how are you doing? thank you very much for having me on. I'm with the Oakland Occupy social media team. And over here at the Port of Oakland, it's just one thing we want to clear up first and foremost, Mike, is that we're hearing media reports that, you know, approximately 1,000 people showed up. This was a sight to see. I wish everyone across the country was here today. This was truly a sight to see. It has to be at least between 5,000 to 8,000 people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful thing. Regarding the Whole Foods incident, because I got there right after the vandalism. What we think is happening, Mike, is that, as you stated, there's a possibility that we have some Asian provocateurs on the fringe, because the entire downtown takeover, a shutdown of Oakland, which did take place, we verified by traveling the main axis of downtown Oakland, which is called Broadway. Every single business was shut down, and by the way, in compliance. So many of them were in compliance and in support of the Occupy movement. The 27th Street Whole Foods store is kind of on the perimeter. It's not downtown per se. I got there at about 2:30. The incident took place about 2 o'clock. We don't know who did it. What's interesting is that the paint that was used on the supposed cop that was thrown out on Tuesday evening was the same paint, colored paint used today. And then, of course, they painted Strike in huge letters across the windows, because Whole Foods has these huge picture windows,
mm-hmm.
right? And what they did was they spray painted a Strike across their large picture windows, and of course, and then what they ultimately did was to paint the anarchist symbol of, you know, the encircled A.
Right, right.
Okay, now the interesting thing about it is I have a friend who works there. I go to that Whole Foods a lot. Okay, it's close to downtown, but it's not where the Oakland Occupied base camp is at. So we still don't know who's responsible for it. I don't think it was the anarchists. I think it's some provocateurs who want to put this on the blame of the anarchists, because the anarchists have an agenda, right? And they're not going to do a hit and run and just take off.
Right.
But there's some inside stories as to that. There's some issues with some disgruntled employees at that Whole Foods market. I have a friend who works there, and he's a very close friend of mine, a musician, who works there, and he's trying to get out. So there's a lot of issues
mm-hmm.
with that Whole Foods, and what the suspicion is that this could have been a result of some disgruntled employees who took
right.
advantage and exploited, you know, the protest to launch an attack.
Well, I think most people understand, Bill, at this point, that Occupy, wherever, the members of these Occupy movements would no more commit an act of vandalism than they would fly to the moon or pee up a rope. That's not what they're about.
Right, exactly. This is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing, man. I mean, this is like, it's like another universe to see this sea of people ascend on the Port of Oakland, which started about 3:30. So we had, it was such a festive day. It was a day of festivity without the intentions of wanting to shut down Oakland was shut down Oakland. I mean, even the police, because on our way back, we're coming off the bridge now, right? So there was the motorcycle police and all the other police were on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
They were nowhere near the protesters. They weren't in sight. They were on the perimeter of the town. Even with the Whole Foods incident, because I was there right after the attack, mm-hmm. It was a van of riot gear cladded policemen who did come over to investigate what happened to Whole Foods. There was no belligerence whatsoever. And the guys who did it, or whoever did it, actually left. They used it looked to me like either a diver's oxygen tank.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, Bill, yeah. Can you hold on? I've got to do a break here, but can you hold on? Because I want to talk to you some more, okay?
Sure.
All right, hold on a couple of minutes. This is a fairly long break. Just stay there, and we'll get some more live on the scene reporting of Occupy Oakland. Stay with us. Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by Mary from Suquamish, Washington, who says we love the roar of Mike Malloy. Roaring right now is Bill, who's with Occupy Oakland on the scene. I want to mention, Bill, that you are getting excellent coverage. The Occupy Oakland movement is getting excellent coverage from the foreign press. I have an article from the UK, from the Guardian of the UK, that is reporting the story very fairly. Closing the port of Oakland, has that been accomplished?
That was accomplished effective this morning. We ran into a couple of the longshoremen on the way up over the bridge because we have access to the port of Oakland. You have to ascend over a bridge. It's really a beautiful view. So we spoke to these particular gentlemen, and they were saying once they heard that it was going to be a strike, they opted, and you can see all the trucks outside of the port of Oakland. So once they heard there was going to be a massive strike by the Oakland occupiers, they decided to, again, comply and, in essence, support our movement. And you know, so as we ascended into the port of Oakland, you could see all of the trucks line up along the, what they call the frontal road, the frontage road, mm-hmm. You know, the access point into the port of Oakland. I know all I have to say is this, you know, I've been around a long time. I was active in the civil rights movement. I was one of the main organizers up at Cal during the anti-apartheid movement. And what I saw today was something that it goes back to what you said earlier in your broadcast, is that this is something you don't want to tamper with. This thing is peaceful and beautiful, and it consists of all races and gender and sexual preferences and even beyond the economic class. This is a beautiful thing. But if something like this takes place, what we saw today on the strike that we had, God, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I'm telling you, they don't, the powers that be, that so-called 1%, there is no way on God's green earth they're going to win this. It's just no way.
No,
we're going to do it without firing a bullet. It's just no way
what has
that they're going to be able to survive this.
I think what has to happen, Bill, is that this movement that began in New York has now found its second wind. I guess that's one way of putting it, or its first wind, its powerful wind in Oakland. It's got to spread across the country, and there has to be the numbers of people turning out has got to continue to increase until we reach a point where the political and economic structure in this country understands that the game is up, the jig is up, the game's over, and there will be equality and fairness in this country, or the economic and political system will be brought down. And as you point out, and I think everybody in the Occupy movement is pointing out, there are much more powerful methods and means than using force in order to stop this negative energy that has so devoured this country and it has devoured the entire planet. It's got to stop, and I think it is stopping. Bill, if you don't mind, please stay in touch. I'd love to hear from you again tomorrow. Okay.
Sure. And let me just say one more thing
Sure.
before I go. And this is a message directed to one of the Green 960 talk show hosts who keeps talking about we need to take the money out of the government. The Occupy movement's not focused. The message to her is this. We know about that. We know that that is the objective. That's a long-term objective. But and this whole issue of the Occupy movement is not focused. I want her to understand that we know precisely what we're doing. And if this person wants to get involved, they can. But she must understand that it's not an issue of just taking the money out of government. We know about the government corruption and money and all that. But you have to solve the issues
right.
of the local populace first. If you have people that are starving, that are homeless, they haven't worked in five, structurally unemployed for 5 years, you know, you can't go up to them and say, take the money out of Wall Street. I mean, take the money out of government. Yes, they know that, but you have to give them the necessary necessities before they can even get their consciousness raised. So we're still in a consciousness raising phase here, but it's coming. It's coming. Trust me, it's coming. It's a beautiful thing, and Mike Lee, thank you for all your support.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot. Good point, and I appreciate what you had to say. I hope you will give us a call tomorrow and the next day and the next. Take care. Take care. Gene is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Mike. I don't know how this fits into what the previous caller was talking about. Maybe this is part of the consciousness raising. I don't know, that shows us the difference between just the regular people out there and the divisions forced on us by the system. A friend of mine sent me a video
mm-hmm.
of Scott Olson getting hit with that canister.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exactly show him getting hit, but it shows a before, and then it shows some projectiles, and then it shows him lying in the area quite close to the barricades where the police were.
Mm-hmm.
And in the aftermath, of course, the video then shows occupiers coming to see what happened to him and to assist him and help him.
And then they were tear gassed.
I don't know. For me, I realized that what they were doing was shooting more
right.
canisters
right.
at the wounded person.
And the people trying to help
and
him.
And the people trying to help him.
How sick is that? How vicious is that?
How sick is that? And I think the more people who see that and see that the system is forcing us to do this to our fellow citizens
mm-hmm.
for no reason at all. I mean, Mike, I'm not a person who's been in the police or anything like that.
Right, right.
But isn't there somebody in that line that says, do it again,
yeah.
shoot again?
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't. They just don't go willy-nilly in each place.
No. There has to be supervisors in New York, in Occupy New York. It is the people, the police in the white shirts who are not in the blue uniform. We know this now. The white-shirted people were the ones who walked up to unprotected, peacefully demonstrating women and shot pepper spray in their faces. The average cop, unless he's under attack, is not allowed, it's my understanding, to do that. A supervisor can do it and can order the other police to do it. But I'm sure the same thing applies in Oakland, that the people
right.
who are responsible for, first of all, shooting Scott Olson and then tear gassing the people that came to help him, that those were supervisors. I don't think that the rank and file cop who is a public employee who has to understand that his or her job is as much at risk as anybody else who's in the working class in this country is going to do that unless ordered by a supervisor. And I don't think the orders, if those orders come down again, I think police are going to say no. I think rank and file cops are going to say no, I'm not going to do it.
Well, what shocked me was I'd like to see that video analyzed by someone who knows what's going on.
Well, I'll tell you where to go to take a look at it, because exactly what you're saying, it has been analyzed. Brad Friedman, who runs the website bradblog.com, he's the person that substitutes for me on a regular basis. At his website is, I think you'll find exactly what you're looking for. It's up now. Just when we finish this call, go to bradblog.com. And it's all there. And I think Brad makes a very strong case, that the cops violated not only their own regulations in doing that, but also a consent order that was signed by the city of Oakland, with the feds to prevent this kind of violence, deliberate targeted violence from occurring. So check it out, Gene. Go to bradblog.com and it's all right there for you. Okay.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Gene. I appreciate you checking in. Hannah is in Oakland, listening on Green 960. Hello, Hannah.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
Pretty good.
I just wanted to, give you some of my feedback from the day. Well, first of all, I did hear an interview with the head of the police association, and they're all pretty dumbfounded and freaked out about the whole thing, too. So there's got to be some analysis on who did what, because, Mayor Kwan, she's saying, no, stay back. And the police chief's going, well, I don't really know. And there's just a lot of people that don't know enough. But, somewhere somebody's got to know what happened, because that was totally horrible. Today was another story. Yes, thousands and thousands of people were there because we were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were downtown. And not only that, we've got this great old Art Deco movie theater on Grand Lake, and they always have great things up on the marquee, and they completely shut down the movie theater. And just kept all their appreciation.
Yeah, I saw that on Rachel Maddow's program.
The
marquee said, we support the Occupy movement.
Yeah, and they've always got something, regardless of what's going on. They've got different bills to call on and that sort of thing, but they're great. But for me, I was there right after the port. They volunteered, people went down there, and then that shift for the port, they were also very not only cooperative but into shutting down. I mean, that's the main thing.
Hey, Hannah, can you hold a second? I've got to do a break here,
sure.
But I understand you were at Whole Foods when that.
Yes.
Okay,
was.
I want to talk to you about that.
I'll get into that.
Okay,
right.
If you hold on just for a couple of minutes here while we do this break, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, and thanks to Mary in Suquamish, Washington, who sponsored this hour. Her message, we love the roar of Mike Malloy. All right, thanks, Mary. I appreciate it. We're talking with Hannah in Oakland, listening on Green 960. Now, you were at this whatever it was that occurred at Whole Foods today. I maintain that it was not Occupy people, that any acts of vandalism or violence are now being caused by provocateurs who are... And I'm not referring to the anarchists, like our caller earlier from Oakland said. The anarchists have a political agenda of sorts, and it's not just random violence. So I think that this is being caused by people who want to discredit any way they can this movement. Do you agree, or do you know more about it than I?
Oh, hi again.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me just, I just want to set up just really briefly. You know, I was walking behind a huge banner that said, defend the dignity of Oakland.
Right.
And we had families with strollers, protect the future, and people of all colors and sizes, and lots of dogs who were really noble and, you know, can kind of feel the whole energy of the group. So, again, you know, as the previous caller had said, 27th Street is really away from some of the action. I mean, the main part. So we were marching. I mean, we were just marching and calling things out and being very together. In fact, we were so far away from the main part that there were some cars that were kind of trying to get through. And, you know, they honked and waved, and we stopped, and we very carefully got them across the street. All of a sudden, we turn the corner, and we see this, like, major destruction happening at Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, when people stop at an automobile accident or something, people
right.
were shocked. People were just like, oh, my God, what happened there? And we were really taken aback. And so we stopped, and we kind of had to take a group consensus because we could see that there were several people ahead of us. There was, like, a small group, and they were at first, like, you know, it looked like they were calling themselves anarchists, like, the guy has mentioned what they painted on the building, but we couldn't completely see who they were, but they were just like a small group, and then they ran away, and we thought to ourselves, well, should we just turn around? Because, you know, that's not the energy we want to be part of.
Right.
And then we said, no, we're peaceful, we're here, we know who we are and what we want, and so we just sort of looked at the building for a while, and we just, that's a bummer, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kept marching. We marched around the park then and back over to the main part of the protest. But I had been in the interfaith tent for quite a while earlier in the day, and we were discussing about helping be there if we did see people who were creating violence
right.
and how to take actions of bringing peacefulness and stuff like that. So that's what happened there.
Well,
I kind of agree with you. I don't know why. Yeah, go on.
You know, I was going to say we had an incident here in Atlanta. Occupy Atlanta has been camped in a park in downtown Atlanta green space for a couple of weeks. The mayor of Atlanta, an African-American man, a young guy, a nice man who extended the maximum amount of time that the people could stay there. He said, okay, you go ahead and stay till the first week in November when we have a city council meeting, then it will come up. Well, as soon as he said that, then the very next day, somebody shows up at the Occupy Atlanta campsite with an AK-47 strapped to his back, not a pretend one. When the media said, what are you doing here? Are you a supporter? Are you part of Occupy Atlanta? No. I don't even agree with these people, but I'm here to defend their right to be here. Well, obviously, this freak was looking to cause a disruption, and sure enough, the very next day, the mayor of Atlanta said, okay, that's it. The potential for violence is such, we're going to clear the park. And they arrested 75 or 80 people cleared out. So this kind of activity now by these provocateurs is going...
It's poison.
It is poison. And I hope that everybody involved in the Occupy movement, and I'm sure they do, understand this and will not respond to these freaks except to maybe surround them and isolate them. That's about the only thing that can be done because, the die has been cast, so to speak. I think the political and economic structure in this country understands that this movement is for real. It is organic.
And
it
peaceful.
Is,
and it's peaceful, and we're protesting for our rights. Most of the banks closed down on their own. There was one building that was open. We walked into it single file, nothing. It was great. I mean, and people were waving to us from buildings. I mean, it was really peaceful. Because I know you got a lot going on there, so I'm going to leave you with one very funny story.
Sure.
I was walking with a guy and his dog, and Einstein, the Catahoula leopard hound from Louisiana. And they had been tear gassed you know, when the horrible thing happened to Scott Olson.
Right.
So he goes, you know, so we were kind of that, he was part of the group that we were going down to 27th. He goes, yeah, Einstein's a little leery of 14th and Broadway.
Yeah.
But he goes, watch this. He goes, Einstein, bankers. And the dog starts barking like crazy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Hannah, please stay in touch, all right?
I will. I will. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much for everything. You know, and I do, I just want to let you know that I mean, like, I wrote so many letters. I've been so humiliated that, you know, that Oakland has to be this place of violence in the world. And the thousands and thousands of people that were there today that were so peaceful and loving, people on bicycles passing out water to people and just being there and places to hang out and just, you know, be in the shade and stuff because it was hot.
It is. And that's, I think that's the beauty of this movement. Hannah, there's the music. We got a boogie. Please,
okay,
please.
All right, I'll talk to you later. I'll call back another time.
Thank
you.
You
know how it's going. Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. All right, coming up next hour, it's going to be a radical change here, but I want to get to this about what the connection here in Georgia, the connection between the Fox News channel and these domestic terrorists that were busted last night in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. There is a definite connection, and I want to explain it to you. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. You know, I've been trying ever since I shared with you last night the story of the arrests here in Georgia of these crazed four white men who are terrorists. By any definition, they're terrorists who had planned on wreaking all sorts of death and destruction in order to fulfill their white supremacist fantasies. I've been trying to patch all this together because there are some aspects to the story that I find really interesting. Apparently, these freaks were inspired by an online self-published, quote, novel, unquote, written by another freak, Mike Vanderbo. The novel is titled Absolved. It's about... what the hell is it about? It's about a plot to... never mind. It doesn't make any difference what it's about. From what I understand, I haven't read it. I never will read it. It's a bunch of garbage. It's a typical crap that you find from these psychotic right-wingers in this country. The real terrorism in this country is not from outside the country. We all know this. The real terrorism is from inside the country. The real threat of terrorism is from inside the country. What happened on September 11, 2001 is still open for all kinds of debate, even though the authorities have decided to close it down and the official story is the official story. But real terrorism, a real threat to the United States, comes from these cells of aging white males who are essentially cowards. I've been dealing with these bastards for the past 30 years. I know what I'm talking about. I don't know how to describe them except to say that given the right amount What am I looking for here? It's hard for me to talk about them because they're so disgusting. They're like just worms. I don't know. They're maggots. But given the right amount of inspiration, they'll do things like blow up the Murrah Federal Building and kill 160 innocent people in order to make their point. To most of these people, Timothy McVeigh is a goddamn hero, just an absolute out-and-out hero because he killed American citizens and children. This is how sick this filth is. And this filth is what these four people who were busted last night are comprised of. They're terrible, terrible people who should be exiled, thrown out of the country. Put them on a goddamn island someplace and let the rising sea level drown them like rats. But until that happens, we have to deal with them. Now, there is a Fox News Channel connection here. And as I've been saying, a lot of people have been saying for a number of years, Murdoch's Fox Network is a terror organization. It is subversive. It is anti-American. Every single person who works on that network wants to see America go up in flames. Every single one of them, without exception, they're contributing to that network is the proof of that. It is beyond subversive. This is the kind of propaganda organization, Fox, that any totalitarian regime would love to have. And we've got it in this country under the protection of First Amendment rights that people have their heads cracked open for and the Occupy movement. These rat bastards at Fox dump their poison into mainstream America every single day. And the sad part is how many people have heads that are just yawning chasms of emptiness into which this garbage is pumped by Fox. Now, what's the Fox connection? The Fox connection and the connection to the four terrorists here in Georgia is Mike Vanderbo, who is a former militia member. He's the one who urged his blog readers to throw bricks through the windows of Democratic offices. Remember that a couple of years ago when the health care, Obama's health care plan was passed, and Vanderbo said the way to respond to that was to get violent, you know, throw bricks through the windows of the offices of Georgia members, or I'm sorry, of Democratic members of Congress. In other words, commit acts of vandalism and violence in response to. Now, let me point out that Mike Vanderbo has been on the public dole for years. He gets Social Security. He gets some kind of Medicare or Medicaid payments. You know, this guy is your typical right wing, worm, a hypocrite. He's probably a Christian, too. I'm sure he goes to church every Sunday and praises Jesus. But Vanderbo, in recent months, has been mainstreamed by Fox News. Fox News treats him as an expert on the ATF's Operation Fast and Furious. Remember that? Fast and Furious, the one where the guns that were assigned to dealers and they wound up in the hands of narco terrorists in Mexico, and an ATF agent wound up being shot dead, and on and on and on and on. This is the one that the Attorney General, Eric, what's his name, is involved in. And the right wing in this country, of course, is just frothing at the mouth over this whole issue. But Vanderbo is the guy that Fox News has decided is an expert on all things ATF. They've had him on the air several times. They've done packages on him. Vanderbo was the one who broke the story that the ATF had knowingly allowed gun trafficking suspects to take weapons across the border into Mexico. Now, according to Vanderbo, though, that failed operation is actually part of a secret plot against the Second Amendment, directed from the highest levels of government. Now, this is a theory that Fox News puts out there also. He has also, Vanderbo has pushed bizarre theories linking the program, this ATF program, Fast and Furious, to Hillary Clinton not running for president. And just all kinds of things. You see, it all stitches together. When you're paranoid schizophrenic, everything stitches together. So Fox News has repeatedly featured this guy as an authority on the ATF's failed Operation Fast and Furious. They never identify him as a former militia leader, as a leader of the extremist three percenters, as an armed rally speaker, as a Minuteman, as a conspiracy theorist. Fox identifies him as an authority on the ATF, when this guy is nothing but another psychotic son of a bitch wandering around in the United States with all these crazed ideas about, oh, they're trying to take our guns. Oh, the queers are coming. Oh, my God. They're going to force your old lady to have an abortion. Fox News treats this guy as though he were an authority on something other than insanity, which he's not. Now, the tie-in, with this guy and Fox News and the four Georgians, the four Georgian men who belong to a fringe militia group, arrested last night and charged with plotting an attack against U.S. citizens using the poison ricin, not to mention explosives and guns. The tie-in, I'll explain to you in a second when we come back. It's just absolute madness. Why Fox News is allowed to broadcast another 3 minutes to me is beyond rational.
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
Here comes the helicopter.
21 past the hour. All right, yeah, four guys arrested down here, all in their 60s or 70s. They're going to pump poison into the faces of American citizens. They're going to blow up buildings and assassinate people. And meanwhile, over on Fox News, there is a guy that Fox News has been promoting as an expert on alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and this the so-called failed Operation Fast and Furious about gun smuggling into Mexico. This guy's name is Mike Vanderbo, and Fox News has been promoting him, leaving out the fact that he's a militant American terrorist. Fox News has been promoting him and his views on their channel, on their network, for months. All right, what's the connection between these four guys and Mike Vanderbo? Well, let me back up just a little bit. In January this year, Vanderbo was among the first to break that story about the ATF agents that had knowingly allowed gun trafficking suspects to take weapons across the border into Mexico. This is according to Media Matters. According to Republican congressional investigators, the operation was intended to allow law enforcement to identify other members of the trafficking network that for years has directed assault weapons into the hands of Mexican cartels with the goal of bringing those cartels down. Now, obviously, it failed. But according to this freak Vanderbo, the failed operation was actually part of a secret plot against the Second Amendment directed from the highest levels of government. And that's a theory, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, that Fox News itself, it loves to promote. Now, Vanderbo has been featured In two package reports by Fox News correspondent William Lajeunesse, the most recent of which aired on September 27th of this year. The Vanderbilt was also cited in a FoxNews.com article earlier this month. Fox has identified Vanderbilt as an online journalist and an authority on the Fast and Furious investigation, leaving his extremist past, his use of violent rhetoric, and his propensity for conspiracy theories unmentioned. But that's what Fox does. Now, the four Georgia men who were busted last night, according to FBI, belong to a fringe militia group. They have been charged with plotting an attack against U.S. citizens and federal employees using the biological toxin ricin, which comes from, castor beans, whatever the hell they are. Don't send me an email. I don't care. Authorities say, here are the guys, 73-year-old Frederick Thomas of Cleveland, Georgia, 67-year-old Dan Roberts, 65-year-old Ray Abrams Adams, and 68-year-old Samuel Crump, all of Toccoa, Georgia, began meeting in March of this year as part of a covert group that called itself, well, the Covert Group. That was their name. We're a covert group named the Covert Group. Woo! A confidential FBI source recorded a, quote, clandestine meeting, end quote. This is according to the TPM Muckraker, by the way. A clandestine meeting that took place on St. Patrick's Day of this year at Thomas's house in Cleveland, Georgia, where Thomas, Roberts, and others allegedly discussed how to obtain castor beans to make ricin. Thomas, who allegedly led the meeting, mentioned a fictional novel he read online in which an anti-government group killed a large number of Justice Department attorneys. The online novel in question is called Absolved, written by Mike Vanderbo, a right-wing blogger and former militia man who lives on government disability checks, who has been featured on Fox News in relation to the Fast and Furious scandal, and who is on Representative Daryl Issa's press release distribution list, and previously advocated on his blog for opponents of the health care law to throw bricks through the windows of Democratic members of Congress. Do, 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 do. Now, in reaction to these arrests, this Fox News star, Mike Vanderbo, called those arrested, the four men, a geriatric militia and said he was skeptical of the charges. Now, you can be skeptical of charges, of course, like the Iranian-American used car salesman busted in Texas who allegedly had gone to Mexico or hired somebody and they were going to hire a narco hit team to go to Washington and kill the Saudi ambassador in order to... Or you can check out real terrorism. White men in this country who are absolutely incensed because there's a black man in the White House and will do anything. And they're egged on, of course, by Fox News. Anything to cause death and destruction in this country. This is what the Fox organization wants. This is what Roger Ailes wants. This is what Glenn Beck wanted and still does. This is what Bill O'Reilly wants. This is what Sean Hannity wants. This is what all of them want. Because it makes for great television, you know, people shooting at each other and stuff, right? So, these old bastards get together and form this militia called the Covert Group, or they form a covert group called the Covert Group, and then they decide to work up this plot based on this novel put together by a star over at the Fox television network. You follow me so far? All right, more when we come back. Stay with us. Before I go to bed, I get down on my knees and thank God I'm a secret agent man. Secret agent man. Secret agent man. They never pay a number, but they pay you pay my... Jay Farner at...
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So quick recap. Four older men busted here in Georgia, all white men, all the conspiracy theorists, all paranoid schizophrenics. They set up a covert group called the Covert Group, and they're going to poison their fellow American citizens and murder their fellow American citizens and blow up the buildings of their fellow American citizens who happen to be government employees. They case several big cities like downtown Atlanta, figure out the best way to blow ricin out the car windows to make people sick and die. Children, old people, moms, dads, mothers, fathers, PTA members, ministers, rabbis, imams. It doesn't make any difference to these psychotic sons of bitches. So they get infiltrated. They get busted yesterday. All four of them busted, held for all these conspiracy charges to commit murder and mayhem. And turns out they were inspired by a guy named Mike Vanderbo, who is a darling over at Fox News, who wrote some kind of a half-ass novel published online called Absolved that has as its central plot the very same thing that these half-witted jerk white boys up in North Georgia were going to plan to do to their fellow American citizens. Huh? Isn't this nice? Huh? You're afraid of Muslims? You're afraid of Arabs? You're out of your goddamn mind. The real threat to America is these freaks. Anyway, so this Mike Vanderbo, the right-wing incipient armchair, he's an armchair terrorist, you know. He's been members of militia groups. He's on the public dole. He gets government disability checks. It's just your typical half-ass moron who lives a rich fantasy life because he's crazy, because he's a sociopath. But he finds, inadvertently, he doesn't find them, four other sociopaths find him. Ooh, did you read that book online? Woo! Let's us go do it. So the apparent ringleader, 73-year-old Frederick Thomas of Cleveland, Georgia, said in an FBI affidavit. Now, of course, that's just fictional, that book, but it's a damn good idea. He was talking about Vanderbo's novel. An FBI affidavit said he described a scenario in which there would be a line in the sand that could result in the activation of militias. He allegedly claimed he compiled a bucket list of government employees, politicians, corporate leaders, and members of the media who would need to be, quote, taken out in order to, quote, make the country right again. Oh, my God. Now, this is at TPM Muckraker. Thomas allegedly said that there, quote, is no way for us as militiamen to save this country, to save Georgia, without doing something that's highly, highly illegal. Murder. That's effing illegal. But it's got to be done. He went on to say, when it comes time to saving the Constitution, that means some people got to die. These are all alleged quotes from the FBI affidavit. On a subsequent April 16th meeting, Roberts, the 67-year-old, Adams, the 65-year-old, and the others talked about the need to take action against the federal government. That's according to the FBI agent's affidavit. Adams allegedly said, quote, I'd say the first ones that need to die is the ones in the government buildings. When it comes down to it, I can kill somebody. End quote. Now, you see, this is the same thing that Timothy McVeigh decided to do, was to murder 168 American citizens. Among that group were children. How many children were there? 14, 15 children. Little innocent kids were blown to pieces by an American terrorist. These guys wanted to do the same thing. Now, I'll be willing to bet you anything you want to bet that these four morons, these four sociopaths, inspired by Fox, inspired by Beck, inspired by Hannity, inspired by O'Reilly and Limbaugh, I'll bet you that these four would just be absolutely against abortion. Yeah. But they have no problem with blowing up children who might happen to be inside what they call a federal government building. These are sick sons of bitches. This is the kind of evil that's written about in most holy texts. Evil that I don't believe in. I just believe in madness. And these people represent the kind of madness, the kind of mental derangement that the religionists label evil. Here they are, evil. This is evil personified, where you have four old bastards who can sit around up in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains and plan on ways to kill children, men, women, gas station attendants, truck drivers, cops, firefighters, anybody. I'm going to kill them. I'm just going to kill them. If that's not sociopathology, then somebody please tell me what is. You sick punks. Now, here's how the plot unfolded from that point, from the decision by these four old bastards that they are going to have to kill a lot of people in order to, to save the Constitution. We got to save the Constitution. That means folks got to die. Here's how it unfolded from June through now, November. Thomas and Roberts met with the undercover agent and negotiated the purchase of a silencer for a rifle and conversion parts to make a fully automatic rifle as well as explosives.
Yeah, they're going to take a couple rifles with silencers and defend the Constitution, amen.
The complaints allege that Thomas confirmed to the agent that he planned to use the silencer. And he was purchasing and described how he would clean the rifle and use rubber gloves when he handled it so he wouldn't leave his fingerprints on it during its use.
God damn, that's a pretty smart boy, isn't it?
Ultimately, Thomas agreed to purchase the silencer and conversion parts in exchange for providing the undercover agent with another gun owned by Thomas, while Thomas and Roberts allegedly agreed to split the $1,000 cost for the explosives. Thomas and Roberts, these two old bastards, later expressed concerns that the undercover agent was a cop.
You think he's a cop? I don't know. What do you think? I don't know.
But they wanted to go forward with the transaction anyway. The complaints charged that during the investigation of Thomas and Roberts, Roberts described another individual named Sammy, who, according to Roberts, had manufactured the biological toxin ricin and had access to the beans used to make ricin. During one of the group's meetings in September, which was recorded by the confidential source, another one of the conspirators, the guy named Crump, arrived and said he would like to make 10 rounds or 10 pounds of ricin and disperse it in various United States cities, including Atlanta. Crump described a scenario for dispersing the ricin in Atlanta in which the toxin would be blown from a car traveling on the interstate.
God damn.
Crump allegedly also said that he possessed the ingredient used to make the toxin and cautioned the source about the dangers of handling it.
Now, y'all be careful. We're going to use this to kill people, women and children and men and stuff. But you be careful now when you handle it. God damn, watch out now.
The complaints alleged that in October of 2011, last month, Crump described to the source the process to manufacture ricin and advised that the materials should be purchased at different locations far from where he lived. You know, I mean, that's pretty slick, isn't it, Truth Seeker? Crump again discussed various methods of and locations to disperse ricin and told the source that the toxin is deadly if the powder comes into contact with a person's skin or lungs. During another meeting in October, Adams allegedly provided a sample to Crump of the beans used to manufacture ricin from a storage container of the beans contained at the residence in Stevens County, Georgia, his residence, and Crump in turn provided the sample to the source.
I got these here magical beans.
Now, can you just see this? They manufacture this ricin powder, and they're driving along interstate here in Atlanta. And one of these asses rolls down the window and this stuff blows back in his face, right? Can't you just see this?
Oh, damn, I got it all over me. Well, God damn it, I told you. Well, quick, get me to the hospital. I can't take you to the hospital. Why not? Because then they'll find out, they'll figure out what we're doing. We're trying to kill people. Damn, why'd you get that? Hey, you're turning blue. Hey, you're dead.
Hmm. The complaints also allege that in October 2011, last October, Crump described to the source the process of manufacturing ricin. Oh, I already shared that part with you. During another meeting in October, Adams, all these names I'm mentioning, these are these four old guys who decided to kill Americans. Adams allegedly provided a sample to Crump of the beans. I told you that part. During meetings on October 29th, just a couple days ago, Crump allegedly told the source that he was going to shell the beans that week. I'm fixing to shell them beans. You want to come over and watch me shell them? You know, I just put my thumb inside that hull and that bean pod and just flip them beans out. Come on over and watch. All right, there's more to this tale of schizophrenic madness. Stick around. Before the hour. So I don't know if I've shed any light on this Southern Gothic horse crap that occurred probably not very far. Well, I know not very far from the broadcast compound of the Mike Malloy program here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. We are not that far from Toccoa, Georgia, and Cleveland, Georgia, where all this nonsense took place. But it's not really not. The fact that it's run by clowns and has a cartoonish aspect is beside the point. These four sons of bitches who will now spend their golden years sitting inside a federal penitentiary cell someplace, these four cartoon characters had seriously plotted and planned to kill God knows how many American citizens, just people driving down the expressway, children with the window open waving at the funny looking four men in the car. I mean, this is a kind of terrorism that only derives from the evil hearts of these right-wing bastards who think they're doing something good. And they were given their, more or less given their marching orders from the Fox News Channel, from the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Broadcast Network, who took the guy who wrote this half-assed novel, Absolved, and validated him. Fox News took this Mike Vanderbo and turned him into some kind of an expert when he's nothing of the sort. He's a right-wing, racist, militia-type terrorist, another one of these armchair terrorists who say he gets disability checks from the federal government. He's on the public dole. He sucks money up rather than contributing. He's a phony right-wing son of a bitch like so many of these people. So Fox turns him into some kind of an expert on the ATF. These four clowns in the North Georgia Mountains read his book, see him on Fox, come to their own understanding that he is now real because he's been on the TV. You're not real unless you're on the TV, especially if you're on Fox. My God, they're fair and balanced. So they put together their little covert group that they call the covert group. Jesus God. And begin the process of figuring out a way to cause death, blood, and destruction, much the same way that that all right-wing terrorists in this country do. Now, the last part of this, one of these clowns, the 65-year-old Adams, used to work as a lab technician at the Department of Agriculture. That's a government job. While Crump, the 68-year-old, was a contractor, used to do maintenance at the Center for Disease Control. That's a government job. You see what I'm talking about? You see these filthy, disgusting, right-wing Timothy McVeigh wannabes? These murderous sons of bitches who will sit in church on Sunday morning and praise their Redeemer and go out on Tuesday night and figure out ways to blow ricin out the windows of their cars and cause innocent people to die. Thomas, another one of them, Thomas would be the 73-year-old. According to a profile at redstate.com, another nest of these right-wing cockroaches is a Vietnam vet who worked as an aerospace communication systems engineer and held top security clearance for nearly 50 years. Another government employee! More or less. Roberts, the other one, Roberts is the 67-year-old. He sued a number of local officials in a newspaper in federal court in relation to a 2004 event that he organized at a middle school, a Southern Heritage event he organized at a middle school that featured a Confederate flag, and according to the lawsuit, he, quote, co-sponsored and assisted in flag rallies organized by the Southern Rights Association. He is widely known in the area as a flag supporter, end quote. He's also an athletic supporter. In other words, he's a jock strap. He's an idiot. Well, the FBI says it has plenty of recorded material implicating the defendants. There is one issue in the affidavits that could provide fodder for defense attorneys. One of the cooperating sources, out on bond on pending felony state charges, gave responses during an FBI polygraph test about the investigation of the militia group that are a little bit dodgy. Thanks to Media Matters and Talking Points Muckraker, TPM Muckraker, Matt Gertz at Media Matters and Ryan Riley at TPM Muckraker for trying to put together. I mean, how do you codify and assemble all the information about these kinds of halfwits? Murderous halfwits. They may be halfwits. They may be cartoon characters. They may be the kind that have about 40 pounds of their gut hanging over their belly, over their belt. But they have the potential to murder gleefully an awful lot of innocent people. And like I said, these are ones who would probably, I'll go to jail before I let them commit abortion at Planned Parenthood. What's wrong with these goddamn women? Why don't they stay home, keep their legs crossed? But when it comes to living children, that they would have no problem murdering with ricin? Well, that's a different story, right? These people make me sick. They should make you sick. And they should be politely taken out of this country and dumped someplace in an international garbage heap. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.